is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience. KBOO, Portland.
It seems like recently the struggle to take action on climate change has gotten more complicated. And there are a lot of solutions that are presented to us that at first glance look kind of good because they have the words green or renewable in them. But then when you dig into them more deeply, it turns out that not only are they a waste of precious time, but they actually are climate solutions that are worse for the climate. It's like chasing chimeras, a beast from Greek mythology, which sounds fabulous, but ends up to be a fanciful illusion.
Chasing Chimeras, The Lure of Deceptive Climate Solutions, a new documentary by veteran producer Barbara Bernstein, premieres on Locus Focus Monday, January 27th at 10 a.m. Tune into Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM Portland, 104.3 FM Corvallis, or 91.9 FM Hood River, or anywhere in the world streaming online at kboo.fm. That's Chasing Chimeras, The Lure of Deceptive Climate Solutions on Locus Focus Monday, January 27th at 10 a.m.
Pacifica Radio in San Francisco, this is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, Angela Sombrano of the National Day Labor Organizing Network prepares for the second Trump presidency as threats of mass arrests and deportation loom large. Also, farm workers' communities in Salinas disrupt a public hearing and stage a die-in to protest new regulations regarding cancer-causing pesticides they claim are racist. We'll also welcome back Roberto Hernandez, Mission District activist with plans and actions planned to resist Trump when the time comes. Also, KPFK producer Gary Baca joins us for an update on the deadly fires in L.A., and Keith McHenry reports on the fires this time at the world's largest battery storage plant in Northern California here, sending plumes of toxic smoke into the atmosphere, leading to the evacuation of at least 1,500 people. All this and more coming up straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints. Excuse me. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is your daily investigative news magazine. We're coming to you every weekday from 5 to 6 over the Pacifica Radio Network. We're in San Francisco today, and we are happy to have you along. There is a lot going on in this world. Later on, we're going to get to take a look at those lithium fires burning down south. This is extraordinarily dangerous, but we're going to begin with discussing what's going on in both Los Angeles and in San Francisco. Let's start in Los Angeles. First of all, we welcome, of course, to the show our own Miguel Gavila Molina. Welcome, Miguel. Are you there?
Absolutely, Dennis.
Terrific. The fires are burning everywhere. And I think we've got Gary Baca from KPFK, our sister station down south. Gary, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hello, Bay Area.
Thanks for joining us. We're glad to have you back. And also Roberto Hernandez, who is considered the honorary mayor of the San Francisco's Historic Mission District. And welcome back to you, Roberto. Good to have you back.
Buenas tardes. Glad to be with you all.
Terrific.
Good to hear your voice, Roberto and Gary.
And welcome, everybody. Why don't you give us your story, Gary? Why don't you tell us a little bit about what it feels like these days wrestling with the fires, and it's not over, is it?
No, the winds are down for now, but the Santa Ana winds, also referred to as the devil winds, are strong. So, you know, there was a thing with our KPFK transmitter. There was a fire up in Mount Wilson, and it was getting close to our transmitter. And so we had to go up there and get the generator going and get it on gas. But it's just wild what's happening in the different communities and the different areas of Southern California. You know, you got the Hearst Fire, the Eaton Fire. The Eaton Fire in Pasadena, Altadena, near Azusa, 65% contained as we speak, but that could change with high winds. So at this point, some of the communities are in cleanup effort, and that's what's going on right now. So between the Pacific Palisades Fire, which is 22% contained, folks are still out there in the community, and, you know, the community is coming together. That's a great thing, especially when we talk about Pasadena, Altadena. These are sanctuaries for non-documented workers. It's a place of hope and opportunity. You know, and the city is urging LA officials, the mayor, LA County elected officials, to ensure that undocumented residents are taken care of and get the relief that they need. A lot of them are afraid. There's a rumor going around that ICE agents are out arresting people. That seems to be false, but, you know, that can change. Who knows? So, yeah, we're dealing with the winds. We're okay now. It seems that there is some containment, but, you know, this can change with another windstorm.
Gavilan.
Well, Gary, you know, the thing that also concerns me a lot is outside of, you know, the effects on the undocumented, you know, immigrant community, you know, day laborers. These are workers that have to be out on the streets, you know, and they're out working landscaping. They're out doing the minor construction. You know, there's a lot of different tasks that day laborers do every day. And it's what we call, you know, you hire a human for a day and then you dispose of them at the end of the day. That's a lot of what day laborers, you know, have to deal with. But what have you heard, if anything, Gary? You know, is anybody watching out for these workers, making sure maybe they got some kind of protective masks that protect their eyes? Because the air, from what I hear, the air quality is really, really bad. And, you know, who knows what's burning up in those fires and eventually falling down and people breathing. Have you heard anything or seen anything?
Well, as you know, Miguel, you know, undocumented migrants have a lack of health care, and there's language access, disaster aid, housing and transportation. These are all things that folks need now. Everything is confusing. The city is not letting people know where to go. They're not passing out flyers. They don't have a representative out there letting folks know. People are basically out there having to fend for themselves. So many have lost homes and their jobs to the fire. So, you know, you got the landscapers, the restaurant workers, service providers, people that are road workers and Caltrans and all that. Some are not eligible for relief. Lack of info and in Spanish. And there are a lot of people that are afraid to seek help. So, you know, you got folks out there, you know, trying to, with family, get back on their feet. But the community has stepped up. And, you know, I just got to say, you know, these folks are are putting on barbecues, cutting hair, providing water and clothes to some of the undocumented workers that are showing up, and they're bringing their pets. But, you know, from what I understand now is that the community is bonding together, and there's no discrimination that's happening out there. But, you know, there was a protest amid the wildfires. Hundreds peacefully protested the mass deportation threats in downtown Los Angeles, with signs saying no ICE sweeps, no ICE sweeps. So people are out there, they're protesting, they're looking out for folks, a lot of different organizations. Black Lives Matters is also involved, and the magazine out here called Galo News is also involved. Big shout out to Giselle Polomera, who is a writer, and she works at this great newspaper that's really on the ground talking about some of the stories that are happening. And she conveyed a few stories to me, such as in Altadena, Cafe de Leche was burned down to the ground. This is a Latino-owned shop for many, many years. So in this area, Altadena, this is a predominantly Black and Latino community, much like Oakland. A lot of residents there are working class people who own homes that are multi-generational. So what's happening is the residents were actually out there putting out the fire with firefighters. They were holding the hoses. They were telling, hey, there's embers popping up over here. There's a fire over here. So Chicanos, Mexicanos, they were all out pretty much helping the fire department. It was a real community effort. Some of the stories that Giselle Bomovera had also said was there was a gentleman, Jose Medina. His home barely survived, but now Jose and his family are displaced due to the fire. So he went out there and he helped residents while his home was burning. He said, forget about the house as long as the residents are safe. And, you know, his message was, whatever we lost, you'll get back and even more. So it's a message of hope from a man who lost his home. And I also got to mention this, Miguel and Dennis. One of our great friends who we've been supporting for many years, Jimmy Espinosa from The Midnighters, who gave us songs like Chicano Power, Making Zen Meets, came out of East L.A. in the late 60s. His home burned down to the ground completely. He lost $200,000 worth of recording equipment and instruments. So, you know, it's just so much going on. People were affected. But, yeah, I hope I answered your question. You know, there are a lot of people that have lost their jobs and are out there looking for more work, and it's just crazy out here.
Gavilan, please.
Oh no, that's something that I've been hearing a lot too, you know, how communities are coming together, you know, not just with a fire, but also, you know, preparing. You know, for another, you know, this time it's going to be another storm that's coming from the administration that's about to, you know, take the White House. So I know those efforts where the community's coming together is also happening, you know, throughout California and all the way up to San Jose and San Francisco. I know that, you know, there's efforts to come together as communities and organize. I know that there's groups, you know, raising food, you know, gathering food for food banks to take down the Southern California. But there's also a lot of focus up in this area because there is a fire raging, Dennis, as we speak, you know, between Santa Cruz and Watsonville at that PG&E battery storage facility.
And we will have a report on that coming up, and it's a frightening situation. But Miguel, maybe we should also bring into the talking about mobilizing and getting ready for the next 4 years. We've been having an ongoing dialogue with Roberto Hernandez, who we honor and appreciate in terms of the years of organizing he's done in the historic Mission District of San Francisco. And I think it would be great if you talk a little bit about plans. What's going on, Roberto? And you can jump in after that, Miguel, if you want.
Absolutely.
So we are inviting everybody that's listening today. This is an opportunity for you to get involved. As we all know, on Monday where we have the Martin Luther King birthday celebration, and unfortunately is the day that Trump will be sworn in, which does not make sense to a lot of us. It's a big contradiction. But here in San Francisco, we've been working now for over 2 months to plan an action to stand up, rise up, and resist this inauguration. So we decided to do a march here in the Mission District, which historically has been a community that has stood up for many, many different causes, not only locally, but around the world. And so we invite everybody to come join us this Saturday at 11 o'clock in the morning. We're going to be gathering on 24th and Bryant Street. And the beginning will be the, and I'm grateful to all the various danzantes Azteca who have are collaborating together. Many groups are going to lead us with a ceremonia, which will then do the four directions. And after the ceremonia, we're going to have the Native American brothers and sisters. We're going to do the land acknowledgement. But also, most important, they're going to do a Native blessing. And then after that, we'll have a few speakers. And then we're going to begin the march. The march will go on 24th Street, starting on the corner of Bryant, up to 24th and Mission. We will stop at 24th and Mission at the Bar Plaza, which is another historical landmark where we have had numerous protests throughout the decades. And we will do another ceremony there. And then we will march down Mission Street to 19th Street. And then on 19th Street, we will head up west to Dolores Street, and we will arrive at Dolores Park, which is another space that we've had many demonstrations and ceremonies throughout the decades. At Dolores Park, we'll be there and have a rally, which will begin at 1:30 in the afternoon. So we like to invite everybody to participate, to come out in the street, join us. It's a day of resistance. And I want to thank the People's March because they've joined us. They were going to do a separate event on Saturday, and now we've merged both together because more than ever before, we need unity amongst all people to come together and unite and give us hope and give everybody hope that we are going to stand up, we're going to speak up, we're going to rise up, and we're not just going to allow Trump and his administration to be racist and begin to change and threaten and put fear in our community and within the hearts and soul and spirits of our people. As you know, there's been already, not only here in the Mission District, every day and in other parts of the country, you know, threats of sighting of ICE. Some of them are true. Some of I would say the majority are false. And that in itself, it's pretty sick how somebody can spread a rumor that ICE is on, for example, on Valencia Street this week. And it wasn't true, but it sent a fear alarm throughout the community. I was up north, and the same thing happened up north. And I've been getting emails of and texts of other parts of the country where, you know, the sick individuals are saying, hey, ICE has been, you know, going to do a raid on a location. We do know for a fact that ICE and the Federales have done some raids, and they've arrested people, especially in the Central Valley, which is putting a lot of fear in not only our people, but when I was up north this week, past weekend, businesses representatives found out that I was there and contacted me, and we had a late night evening Saturday meeting, and they're concerned because they're mostly white, and they're saying, hey, we're going to lose our workforce, you know. And so they all, you know, offered to be part of the movement, you know. So what's interesting and beautifully that organically a lot of employees are stepping up and saying, how can we be part of this movement? Because they know that economically it's going to affect them. It's going to close a lot of businesses. It's going to affect the farm owners because without a workforce, they, fruits and vegetables will rot. And so this is an opportunity for us as a country to come together as the power of the people, whether you own a business or you're a farm worker or you're a dishwasher, or if you're retired or not even affected. So that's why it's important that all of you who are listening, come join us tomorrow and be part of a movement that's going to grow within the next 4 years to resist the Trump administration and his racist policies and practices that they want to put in place.
Gavilan, final comments for the segment.
Well, just to wrap it up, outside of coming together tomorrow, you know, as a community all over the North Bay and the North Coast, I know also that, you know, Roberto, you've always involved in also, you know, gathering food for the food bank, you know, to give out to La Raza and so forth and other things. Is there any effort to help raise some of that to send down to those areas in Los Angeles that are in need? Because, you know, when a lot of stuff comes in, a lot of people are making trips. Or are you gathering food, just getting ready here for maybe some food shortages in the future?
Yeah, so that's the other thing, is that we're encouraging people to support our all the people in LA, because it's not only, you know, you see that says all the rich people, their homes got burned out. Well, there's a lot of immigrant families, and just in general, people who are not rich that have lost their homes, but you don't hear those stories in mainstream media. So there's a huge need there, not only for food, for clothing, and a lot of other needs that they have in the Los Angeles area. But the other thing too that's important is that we're recommending to those who can give to start giving, so that we can start storing, you know, rice and beans and oatmeal and other items, you know, because there is going to be a food shortage at some point. And as we
is
all know,
is there an address? Is there phone numbers, address for people who want, Roberto, who want information about that or want to be a part of that? How can they participate?
Yeah, so I'm going to give out the phone number that they can call. It's 415-206-0577. Again, that number is 415-206-0577.
Okay, and that's for people listening to us. We're a national show, but people listening to us in the Bay Area can check in there. We appreciate, Roberto, the incredible work you do and have been doing for so many years, which of course earns you the title of the honorary mayor of the Mission District. And now the battle is on. Gary Baca, you still there? Gary?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Could you just maybe you can help us close out? How do you suppose the fires are changing you? How have you been impacted? I imagine this is a big thing for everybody living through it.
Yeah, it's a scary thing when you're driving to work and you see a big black cloud hovering over you. And then you think about the residents and then the animals, and you just feel for people. I know people that their homes burned down in the Altadena area, and it's really sad, and it does change you, and you feel that you want to do something, you want to contribute, and you want to get out there and, you know, help folks and residents in any way you can. I'd like to thank the KPFA News, actually, the news department, Christina Onnestad, Max Pringle, Scott Baba. They have contributed news headlines every hour here on KPFK, so we can give hourly updates on what's happening on the fire. So, I mean, that's incredible that we could have, you know, the station over there in the north support KPFK here in Los Angeles. And, you know, they've also been talking about the fires in detail and talking about the containments. So, you know, I just want to say I appreciate the Bay Area and you, Dennis and Miguel, for, you know, thinking about us and letting people know, you know, what's going on here in Los Angeles.
All right. Well, we thank you, Gary, for joining us. And please keep us posted. Obviously, the door is wide open. We want to know what's going on because we're worried that the fires are coming back, that we're going to have a round two. And there's a lot of concern about the implications there. So please stay with us. And, of course, we thank Roberto Hernandez. My name is Dennis Bernstein. I'm here with Miguel Gavilan Molina. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're going to take a break. Listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Well, we're continuing our drumbeat coverage in terms of folks who may be in danger given the threats of the incoming administration. And many people in many places are taking stock and preparing in many ways, trying to think about the best way to deal with the administration if they carry through on some of those threats about massive deportations and, you know, using the military and all this drumbeat linguistics meant to create fear among folks in this country who do some of the hardest work and have made it possible for us to have a country. We're honored to welcome to these airwaves Angela Zambrano. She's co-executive director emeritus of ENDILON. That's the National Day Laborer Organizing Network, an incredibly important organization. And also joining us for the segment is our good friend and brother Francisco Herrera, who is really our cultural producer, and he joins us from, I believe, Berkeley, California. Welcome to both of you. Maybe you want to welcome Angela in and kick off the questioning, Francisco.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks, Dennis. And I know Angela is in the middle of our conference now that she's giving, so I'm going to real quickly just say how much I love Angela Zambrano. She's been a hero of mine for 40 years. We met in the work of CISPES and the Solidarity Movement, and she's been a leader at the National Day Labor Organizing Network, and right now has a lot to share with us. Bienvenida, Angela. Welcome.
Yeah, hi, Francisco, and hi, everyone of Flashpoints. It's great to be here. And, you know, your program is very important because it informs the people about what's happening right now, you know, at this time, live. So, great. Yes. Great to be here.
Angela, when we were talking on the phone, we were, we have been mentioned to other conversations with Gavilan and Dennis and how you guys, well, ENDILON is a national organization, but the headquarters is right there, and right in Pasadena, and the day laborers have done such an amazing job of documenting what's going on organizing, of folks who said, ¿sabes qué? No tengo jale, I'm going to go help, and they're actually doing a heroic level of work. Can you tell us a little bit about how you've seen that happen over there, since you're also down in Southern California?
Yes, we are in Pasadena, and so basically, which is right next to Altadena. And as soon as we heard about the fires, not only in Palisades, but also Eaton, which is like north of Altadena, And a lot of the, you know, thousands, more than 105,000 people were evacuated, you know, from the area. So, and we could see the fire all around us, and immediately the day laborers, which is basically they're trained to do that, to respond to natural disasters, they are called second responders. And so they're trained to go out and help respond and help the people in the community. And so they're basically helping to clean up. They have clean brigades where they go out and they clean the areas to take the dead leaves and remove the trees that are have fallen on the streets and the dry leaves. And they called trucks. There's like thousands, literally thousands of volunteers that are working to do that, to clean up the areas where the fire may be starting if it's not cleaned. The dry leaves and the trees are not cleaned out. So they have been doing that, and also at our center, at the day labor center, which is on in Pasadena. In case somebody wants to still come and bring food, they're collecting food and baby diapers and blankets, clothing, and it's at 555 North Lake Avenue in Pasadena. And so the jornaleros, the day laborers, are organizing the volunteers, the brigades of volunteers, to organize, you know, what people are bringing, water and the things that I just mentioned as well, and then giving it to the people that are coming. And one day we had over 2,000 volunteers. So it's really, it's very a work of love, because that's what brings us to, you know, we love our community and we're right there to respond when it's needed, and the day laborers, they're trained to do that. The other thing that we're seeing is that a lot of the people that worked in the houses that burned, you know, we're talking about the people that work in the yards, and also the ladies that clean the homes, nannies and all that, they lost their jobs. So, and some of them lost their homes as well. So it is it's an incredible kind of emergency situation, but the workers are at the front line, and they are the heart of the community to respond.
Híjole. That is just wonderful. Dennis, I have a question, but if you have, go ahead, Dennis, if you have.
No, go ahead, Francisco, please.
Angela, this whole year we were seeing at the level of national day laborers, we were seeing, and Pablo and yourself, Nadia, our executive directors, you were guiding us through the process of saying, look, this is looking this way, and it's going to be very hard. And now we are exactly where Endelon was saying we were going to be. We're facing a tremendous amount of levels of attack. Could you share a little bit how the centers and the whole campaign that we've been doing to organize, preparing for this moment of a tremendous racism, structural attacks against our leadership and organizations throughout the country. Could you share a little bit of where we're going, since we've been here before, Verda?
Yeah, well, we had the experience, you know, the first presidency of Trompudo, you know, call it Trompudo. We had the experience, and so we learned a lot. I mean, they learned, you know, what they could have done. You know, they wanted to do more persecution and stuff, you know, against our people. They also learned. I mean, one of the things that Trump was saying is that a lot of the people were saying, oh no, don't do that because you're going to get a backlash from that. But then he says, oh, this time I'm going to do what I promised to do, which is have mass deportations. And we already know, like, he's putting together, he's having Kristi Noem, who is the, she's the governor of South Dakota, like a white supremacist, that she's going to do what? She's going to be the Secretary of Homeland Security. So she's going to be, like marching orders, whatever Trump tells her to do, she's going to carry it out. And then they have this guy, Tom Homan, who's being called the border czar, which is going to be the another white supremacist that's going to be basically militarizing the border and carrying out the policies of the border. And then we have Steve Miller, who was in charge and the architect of the policy of separating the families. Him, this guy Miller and Homan are the architects of the separation of families to try to keep immigrants from coming, from crossing the border. So they're going to be in charge. So we know, they already said the first 100 days, what they're going to do is they're going to go to the cities that have declared sanctuary and carry out the massive arrests there, the massive arrests. They also announced that they're going to use the military resources, whatever that means, to secure the border. Well, we know what it means, right? But we don't know they're actually going to send soldiers, but they're saying they're going to use military resources to prepare to secure the border and also open detention centers. So they may even open detention centers at the military bases. That's what they talk about, military resources. They're also going to keep they're going to deport. They're going to institute the policy of quédese en México, remain in Mexico. So they're not going to allow people to come across the border. So those are some of the things that they're talking about, and those are the people that are going to be in charge of implementing the policy. But we have been there before. We've learned what we need to do. So we have been organizing what we call Comités de Defensa del Barrio, the barrio community defense committees. And what these committees do is basically they when they see a migra, the migra come in and try to go and detain people, they go and they take the pictures, they the video, and they actually challenge the migra and say, hey, are you here to try to kind of block them from taking the people. But so people are being trained to do that, and also we also have like Know Your Rights. Basically, we teach people to make sure that they don't open. Everybody in this country, including undocumented people, are protected by the Constitution, which it means that you don't have to say anything. You can keep your, you cannot incriminate yourself. So to make sure that people don't talk to the migra, they give information about, we ask people to talk to attorneys to make sure that they have an attorney that say, hey, I refuse to speak, and here, talk to my attorney. And so basically we're preparing people to defend themselves, and we'll be there. Very, very important that people, we're going to the schools, we're going to the churches, we're going to unions and brigades of defense. And, wow. And so we are, yeah, that's, the people need to know that they're not alone, that we have done this before, and that only the people save the people. Solo el pueblo salve el pueblo.
Wow. Well, we appreciate those strong words. I'm sure Francisco and I find it incredibly important that you are speaking out, Angela Soprano. You've been doing this, speaking out and speaking truth to power for a couple of decades, to put it mildly. We're happy that you took time out of your meeting. Francisco, final word?
We have to get the word out to all our listeners. that we've been here before, that it's time to call your local community organization, whether it's a day labor organization or a neighborhood organization where you know immigrant families are, and contribute with your time, with money, with efforts, with resources, so we can support each other during the following, during the next decade and the next 1,000 years.
Well, I find your music supportive.
I do have one thing that we're sponsoring as the local day labor here in Nuevo Sol Day Labor and Domestic Worker Center. So the march tomorrow, we've been a key part of the organizing for tomorrow. We've heard about that. And next weekend, we're going to be having the music festival of the Alliance for Social and Economic Justice at Mission High School. Saturday and Sunday, it'll be all about song, poetry, organizing, along with organizing workshops as to how you use culture to organize. We're also going to have workshops on know your rights, labor rights, immigrant rights, and know your banking strategies, because people are very afraid. What happens if they deport me? What happens to my mortgage? What happens to my small business? What happens to my banking account, my savings, my children, my family? So we're going to have workshops exactly on how do you handle your finances during this time. All of that at Mission High School next week on the 25th and 26th. And people can go to CSEJ, C as in cat, S as in Sam, EJ.org for more information.
Beautiful. Thank you both for joining us on Flashpoints. Yep. And now we're going to hear. Did you want to say something?
No, I was just going to say that Francisco has just laid out exactly what we're doing, and that's what I'm doing right now as we speak. I left the meeting to come and talk to all of you and go to www.endelon, and like in Nancy, D like in David, and like in love, or like in orale, and like in Nancy.org to get information. All right.
Yes, and let's go to some music by our good friend, our resident troubadour Francisco Herrera, a new song about all of this, about what to do when the cops arrive, the migra, the border patrol, you name it.
Los tres chiquillos y mi esposa a lavar. Cuando de pronto que nos cayó la migra, pensando que nos iba a deportar. Pidió papeles y le importó muy poco si mi familia se quedaba abandonada. Pero por eso, tenga o no tenga papeles, hay que saber sus derechos para poderse defender. No tenemos que mostrar ningún papel, no tenemos que decirle nada a nadie, menos a la mira, y si la agarran usted ya sabe qué hacer. Tenemos derecho de mantener silencio, tenemos derecho de hablarle a un abogado, no tenemos que firmar un documento, porque seguro es para la deportación. Si ve a la migra ojeando por la calle, siga adelante como si no existiera. Porque aunque buscan a quien se ve latino, persiguen a quien empiece a correr. Póngase trucha, tenemos el derecho de andar sin ninguna identificación. Sea cordial y no dé información, que la tranquilidad puede ser su salvación. No tenemos que mostrar ningún papel, no tenemos que decirle nada a nadie, menos a la migra, y si la agarran usted ya sabe qué hacer. Tenemos derecho de mantener silencio, tenemos derecho de hablarle a un abogado, no tenemos que firmar un documento, porque seguro es para la deportación. Ay, 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 lucha raza, que tenemos mucho más derecho del que nos damos.
And that's Francisco on Flashpoints. That's Francisco Herrera on Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, who has traveled this hemisphere from one end to the other, singing for peace, singing in the middle of war zones, singing to give people courage and knowledge and vision. And always great to be working with folks like Francisco Herrera, Miguel Gabriel Molina here on Flashpoints. Well, there was some interesting things happening south of here in a place called Salinas, where some activists were concerned about, a cancer-causing pesticide and the way in which it's sort of being dealt with. And joining us to talk about that and to tell us about why there was a die-in at Salinas is Yanli Martinez, and you work with a pesticide reform, pesticide action. Welcome to Flashpoints.
Hi, thank you for having me here.
Sorry to keep you waiting, but we're glad to have you with us. So tell us, set the scene. Where were you when this die-in unfolded, and why did you all feel it was necessary to take it to that level, to, if you will, disrupt and die for the cause?
Yeah, no, thank you for allowing me to be able to share this with you and everyone else that is listening. I was listening to your prior speakers and guests, I should say, and it really touches home because I think it, you know, it's connected to the movement that we're doing with Californians for Pesticide Reform. So my name is Yaneli Martinez. I am a community organizer in the Monterey Santa Cruz region with Safe Ag, Safe Schools. I am also a daughter of farm workers. I was born in Mexico, and my parents migrated to this country when I was only 4 years old. So I came here to this country, what people would say illegally. And I remember being separated from my parents at the time when we were crossing the border. So I just, you know, my heart goes out to everyone right now with this current administration that's coming into place. And that's why us, the activists in the movement for environmental justice, need to step up for those that are going to remain in the shadows because, you know, they are the livelihood of their families. So we that don't have nothing to lose but just fear are the ones that are going to be stepping in and putting our bodies in the line. And that's exactly what pushed us to do what happened yesterday. So basically, the state of California has about over 100 pesticides, right, that are used. And so there's many pesticides, there's many battles, but one currently that we're facing, like you mentioned, 1,3-D, which is a cancer-causing pesticide. And basically, we're telling DPR, the Department of Pesticide Regulation, if you're not going to ban this cancer-causing pesticide, then we, that is already banned in 40 countries, then we at least want you to have regulations that are adequate and that are going to protect our communities. And being a Latina, growing up in Greenville, which is right in the heart of the Salinas Valley, losing my mom 2 years ago because of dementia after she gave all her life working out in the field, this is what we call environmental racism because it's not happening anywhere else. And this pesticide, 1,3-D, is disproportionately affecting Latinos, indigenous communities like my own. And so that's why we took it to that escalation point last night in Salinas at the DPR hearing that they hosted here in the city of Salinas by just calling it out what it is. DPR is a racist agency. They do not follow the rules. They do not follow the real scientists. And so we escalated to the point that a couple of us, I want to call ourselves strawberries, we decided to put our bodies in the line and just drop dead. And at the same time, our amazing Future Leaders of Change, which is a youth-led organization, basically showed these amazing banners that displayed the sentence of DPR is racist, both in Spanish and English, El DPR es racista. So it really just captivated the moment, because speaker after speaker went up and gave their testimony, argued the fact that they're not listening to the scientists. So it was just a culmination of many, many feelings and roller coaster of emotions. So I'm still in shock that we were able to do what we did yesterday, but it was powerful and it was unity.
I see that one of the chants was DPR, you can't hide, we can see your racist side. And so you literally disrupted the meeting. You sort of died in there. What were the reactions of the people in charge?
Yeah, so the way the meeting was structured, it was just like a regular meeting, obviously with the table in the front, having DPR staff there timing you, which we only had a minute and a half to speak. And we were basically told that they were going to take up to certain comments. So if you didn't make it past the ending time 8, that was going to be it. What I recall, because I was one of the ones that dropped it, was that when my colleague Mark Weller was able to give his speech, that was our cue to drop dead. I just remember the chaos from dropping to the floor right next to my son, who just turned 18 and wanted to do this with me, put his body in the line, not just for, you know, the cause, but because he has family members that are undocumented, that are farm workers that can't basically do this because they have so much to lose compared to people that have sort of this image that, you know, we're not in danger, just pretty much ending up in jail but not being deported and stripped away from your family. So as we were on the floor, I could see the DPR staff people walking back and forth trying to basically quiet us down, ask us to please just let the rest of the people speak. I remember seeing a lot of people taking out their phones, taking pictures. I did see a couple of images from folks that were in the room that prior to this, you know, happening, did let me know, like, I can't do this because of my legal status, but thank you for doing this for us. Thank you for speaking up. Beautiful. I remember their faces as we were on the floor. So it was just really a roller coaster of emotions, of feeling proud, feeling angry with DPR, feeling excited that we were letting them know we are a force to be reckoned, and then also at the same time being mad because there was people in the room, growers, maybe people that were paid by DPR, maybe people from DPR that had no emotion. I mean, they're hearing stories of people losing loved ones to cancer, and you are not touched by that? You have no sense of emotions? What kind of human are you?
Wow. Well, Yanli Martinez, if people want more information about what you're doing, is there phone numbers, or is it just maybe people need your help, have stories to tell you, to share with you? How can they get in touch?
Yes, absolutely. So they could follow us on Facebook under the page Save Fag, Save Schools, or they could also go ahead and reach out to me. My phone number is 831-201-9151. And yeah, pretty much that's the way that they could reach out to me, or also via email. For those that do have access to email, at Yaneli, Yaneli, at pesticidereform.org.
Beautiful. Yaneli at pesticidereform.org. We thank you for joining us on Flashpoints. Please come back and keep us posted on your progress. We want to hear all about it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Thank you for allowing me a little bit of time just to share the amazing event that happened yesterday, and that we're not backing down, because 13D is basically nothing but a racist regulation, and it's just killing our community, our Latino indigenous community.
We'll come back and keep us posted, and thank you. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're going to deal with an issue that's going to affect farm workers, people who work in the field, and all of us. Joining us is Keith McHenry. We usually talk in the context of food, not bombs. But Keith, there's clearly a problem at the lithium factory. There's fires burning. There was, I understand, another sort of upsurge or explosion in the last hour or so.
Yes, you know, so this morning when I went outside, there was a horrible chemical smell. And I'm north of where the fire is. in about 20-minute drive. And this is the largest lithium battery fire ever. And it's also, needless to say, maybe not needless to say, it's also the world's largest lithium battery storage facility. And part of it is owned by PG&E, and they've had their problems where their Tesla megapacks caught fire. They've had four fires there. The other three fires, and this is, the, like I say, the worst in history, are owned by Vistra Energy in Texas. And they spent about $1 billion to build this facility, even though in our community we spent years trying to stop it. And they're worth $55 billion, Vistra. And this, when I watched the one of the earliest press conferences of local officials, and there's a supervisor, Glenn Church, who represents the area where this fire is happening. He pointed out, he said a couple of interesting things. He said that this is the largest lithium-ion battery fire ever. This is a three-mile island event for this industry. We really don't know much about this technology. And as we're sitting here tonight, it keeps starting, more and more batteries are blowing up and catching fire, and the debris is now blowing up the entire Salinas Valley. Those of us that live over in Santa Cruz are like, oh great, the wind is at least blowing south, but for the rest of the world, and really for us here, this is a nightmare. So the National Fire Protection Association points out that these are just not like a fire this large, but just regular fire, lithium battery fires, can contaminate and render the soil unusable for agricultural and other uses, especially when large quantities of batteries are involved in a fire. So that's what they were saying before this thing happened. Then the purpose of building, they're hailing this battery facility, which actually also has a natural gas facility as part of it. It used to be like a natural gas and oil burning power station for PG&E, but they're like, hailing it as for clean energy and the cleaner air and all that. And now we've got this burning down the, across our region. So it has in it, the fire itself has got, the smoke has hydrogen fluoride, cyanide, hydrogen chloride, carbon monoxide, formaldehyde, ethanol, methane, and sulfur dioxide in all lithium fires so far. But we don't know exactly if it'll have all that in this fire, but it's likely to, since it was the case in past fires. And the thing is, the fire is going to just keep going, because it's not really easy to put out, and they're going to have to wait for it to burn itself out, which will make this contamination just go not only on the leaves and the plants, but also the farm workers, even if you're not out in the field working, you're going to be contaminated. And it's a possibility that the government is going to have to turn a blind eye to the fact that they're poisoning Americans with heavy metals in their vegetables. This is where it's called the Salinas Valley, where this particulate matter is falling. Heavy metals, cobalt is involved in this, and so on, is called America's Salad Bowl. It's where the strawberries come from. It's where so many vegetables come from. And you have Taylor Packing House and all these other companies that are, a lot of the food that we get to feed people in Santa Cruz also is the food that is the surplus food that comes from this area. And this is just completely tragic that this is happening.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Keith, we're out of time, but we're hoping that you'll keep on this. We know that they've already evacuated around 1,500 people from the direct area. And as you say, they can't put this out and they keep exploding. They simply have to sort of stand by, and they can't do it with water. Anyway, thanks, Keith, for looking out for us.
This is a catastrophe. Thank you so much, Dennis. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks, Keith. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio.
This is Norman Solomon saying that you're listening to non-commercial, listener-sponsored, volunteer-driven community radio, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1930.